There you go.
We go. Off and running.
All right.
I'm going to set up here by you.
Good. Right here. No pressure. Morning, everybody.
Good morning.
I'm glad to see everyone this morning. We have all survived the holidays. Yes. This is kind of a downtime, though. You know, right after Christmas. We were driving home last night, and I was looking at the last remnants of lights on houses and stuff, and I thought, man, it's so pretty, and then it's going to all be gone. Your house looks so pretty, Kayla. It looks really pretty. I like that. Looks really good.
Well, on that note, I don't generally go anywhere at night, but the ball games have started. So I've made it a point to come home by Salem so I could go by Cindy's and then
Yes.
But it's amazing to me how many lights are decorated on Route 50.
Yeah.
How many
yes. I love Christmas lights. And Cindy's house is unbelievable. I mean, I've been driving by that now for, 6 weeks? And I stop every night and look at that. Yeah. I love it.
You can't see it on a pass by.
Oh, no. You've got to. And then I always beat my horn. I think what she should do is schedule little mini tours through there. It's so great. Okay. Looking at our lesson here, the first lesson for the new year, Jesus cleanses God's house. Now, this is a pretty well-known lesson. But what I liked most about this lesson is when you started to think about what Jesus was doing here. He was really a radical man, Jesus was. He was concerned with the poor and the downtrodden when that was not a popular thing to be. Jesus was pretty radical. And here he is concerning himself with two things that are really not going to make him very popular. Number one, the poor. And number two, the Spirit of God and what God would have us be and do. These are things that didn't matter much to the Sadducees and the Pharisees. And also, just in a brief, I was looking up the difference between Sadducees and Pharisees. Anybody know what it is?
Well, I looked it up too, but go ahead.
Great minds. The Sadducees were mostly concerned with the temple and who was running the temple, and they were a very, very strict cult of the Jews. Okay, they believed in the Torah and only the Torah. They did not believe in any spoken word. The Pharisees, they were a little bit lighter. And I kind of found myself thinking, well, they're not too bad. They believed in the Spirit. They believed in the spoken word as well as in the Torah. And they weren't as harsh as the Sadducees. Do you want to add?
Sadducees also were for the rich.
Yeah,
because most of the Sadducees
were rich.
Rich, wealthy people. And so they are their own. You know how that game works.
And where did these people all come from, actually? This was another enlightenment moment for me. Who were they actually originally?
Sadducees.
They were from the tribe of Levi.
Oh, that was the priesthood.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Just little things I didn't know, which there's a bunch of. Okay, before we really jump into this, can we just please say a prayer for a minute? Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for bringing us all together here today to study your word. Lord, we ask that you open our hearts and our minds so that we may take this message and ruminate on it and put it to use in our lives. Lord, I pray that I say everything you would have me to say today so that it touches somebody's heart. And these things I ask in your Son's precious and holy name. Amen. Okay, Jesus cleanses God's house. And so we are in John 2:13. This is one of the things that all four Gospels report on this. Okay, all four Gospels mention this. Okay. John 2:13. Would somebody just read that first verse for us? Okay. Will somebody still read the first verse for us, please?
And the Jews' Passover was at hand.
What was the Passover?
That was the celebration of the passing of the death angel over.
Good. What did they do to prevent the angel of death from visiting their house?
Blood on the doorposts and the lintels.
Blood on the door, right? Pass over. The angel passed over. Okay? And that was the celebration. Okay, so the Jews all went to where?
Jerusalem.
Why?
It was where the tabernacle was.
Uh-huh.
It was also in capital.
The big place.
Yeah.
Is where they had everything going on. And it was important that they go. And they came from where? Where did the Jews come from?
Everywhere.
Everywhere. If Salem were Jerusalem, the Jews were coming from Parkersburg. They were coming from everywhere. And it was a long haul because they did what?
They walked.
Okay? Let's see. I never do real good about these questions and when I'm supposed to ask them. Why might John have recorded the events out of order in this gospel? Okay, so John did record the events of this happening here with Jesus out of order chronologically. Why did he do that? I don't really know that this is the most important thing I've ever read in this book, but...
I think he was John.
Uh-huh.
So if he said that right up front, got that out there right.
He kind of published important stuff first, didn't he? What he viewed as establishing Christ, who he was, he kind of talked about that first in his gospel.
It also showed not just him cleansing the temple, but it showed that of his great love and his obedience for the glory of God.
And his dedication to the temple of God. His reverence to the temple of God. Right? Okay. Okay, we have already answered question two. How far did the people come? They came from a long way. However, why couldn't they just bring their own... No, I'm skipping over. All right, let's do... Sorry, go.
With the Gentiles, did they come too?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And I found this even interesting. If you look at the design of really... every church. But I was thinking about when I was a kid, the big churches that I was in, there's always a backspace and then there's an inner space, right? So when I was reading this, in my mind, I thought the Gentiles and the people who didn't know the Jewish faith, they would come to the backspace and they would look. They would watch, right? And so I kind of envisioned that as being where this was all taking place, where they were selling the animals and stuff. And up front here is where all the sacrifices and holy goings-on was happening. That's just me.
So that would be like the sinners looking in.
Yes, looking in the windows, yes. And it was a really, really important thing, particularly to Jesus, that the Gentiles and the sinners could come and look upon this ceremony. It was very important. Why? And why is it still important today?
That's why Jesus came, for the Jew and the Gentile.
And the Gentile. And why is it important today that I see you shaking your head, and I know you've got the answer. Why is it important today that sinners come to the church?
Salvation.
How else will they learn the word? Right? So we don't want to do anything to block that back door, do we? We want them to come in here and see what we're all about and what the goings on are. Yes? Darlene?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought you had something you wanted to say.
No, I'm good.
Okay, so what was going on back there in this story, in the back of the church? What was happening?
A whole bunch of stuff. Well, this is the lesson that we skipped. June had said, you know, the Sunday we had the snowstorm, this lesson about the tabernacle, that's the one that we didn't have, and she said that she had some. This is the way the tabernacle was designed.
Right.
The inner place, the Holy of Holies, was where the Ark of the Covenant was.
Right.
And that's the Ten Commandments. But then there was a veil put up. Okay. And then the next area is where the priests went. That's where they went. They cleansed themselves, got ready to worship. They made the sacrifices there. They did all that in that next circle. Okay. So then this outer circle, that's where the Jews could go, or that's where the Gentiles had access to. Nobody had access to that middle part except the priest. And everybody got there, and all this stuff was going on in that outer part.
What happened?
He got mad,
yeah. But why? I mean, they couldn't even see what was happening. Mm-hmm. The people that came there to see what this religion, this faith was all about, the Gentiles, the sinners that knew nothing about this, they couldn't even tell what was going on. They couldn't figure out what was such a big deal here because there was so much going on in the back of the tabernacle, in the back of the church, if you like. They couldn't see. And what was going on? They were selling doves, they were selling cows, they were selling sheep. Anything to be sacrificed, that was all happening in the back of the church.
And you can imagine how noisy and how smelly.
And I'm a farm girl.
Uh-huh.
Can you imagine what that was like back there?
That was besides probably all the language.
Exactly. It was a din, wasn't it? I mean, there was just blah, 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 blah going on back there. Very big distraction.
The thing was, too, they were making profit. They were making good profit. The devil did not have all these sacrifices that they could bring and probably ate them on the way.
Or the sacrifices were supposed to be unblemished.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So when you're trying to get the cow to the church, and you're marching from Parkersburg, you're beating them with a stick, you're moving them along. They're not unblemished, right?
Yeah.
You think I'm like,
they use cattle prods.
Making the profits that they were making.
Yeah. They were
what they were doing.
Price gouging
was allowed. because it was a necessary provision for the people that were coming to sacrifice. What Christ didn't like, and you brought that up, what he didn't like is they were no longer doing it for the reason that God had appointed. They were doing it for personal, materialistic gain.
They were price gouging.
They were price gouging.
That's what, when we look at our life, see, we have to relate all of this to our spiritual life. So when we look at our life today, there's things that we do in as believers that Christ, same way, he's not pleased with it, because even though we say God allows it, we take it to a whole different level and we're doing it for our own personal gain or for our own materialistic gain, and we're no longer doing it for the Lord. So he's not pleased with this. So this is how we relate this to our life. We got to remember that when you study this stuff in the Bible, nothing goes on that God does not allow. But sometimes he allows things that he's not necessarily pleased with, but he allows them anyhow.
Teachable moment, because that's your choice. That's true.
Right.
And he gets to prove a point then.
Right.
Well, and the thing of it is, they could have done this outside. They could have done this. The town of Jerusalem was a big. Why did they have to do it inside the temple? Inside that house?
So it kind of takes away the reverence of God's house, of the ceremony that's taking place, takes away all that reverence. And what does God deserve if not our reverence? Why would we not be in awe of him? Again, it's all about the spirit of what's going on. Okay, how many chapters have I jumped over here? I'm really a bad teacher. Could the Gentiles actually participate in Passover?
Yeah, they could offer sacrifice.
Yes, yes, yes.
God has always made provision for the Gentiles. Go clear back when Moses and Aaron brought the children of Israel out of Egypt. Most people will say he didn't bring no heathens with him. He only brought the Jewish people. That's not true. The Gentiles are considered heathens. Okay? So how many of you here are Gentiles? Heathens. Okay. So he made provisions for that. So when he brought the children of Israel out of Egypt, Gentile people came with them. God made provisions for that. And why? Because he knew from the beginning that his wife, which is Israel, that's God's wife, would commit idolatry. Idolatry, not adultery. Idolatry. And at that time, now this grace dispensation period focuses a lot on the Gentile people where it didn't used to, but it also still focuses on the Jewish people as well. So there's always been provisions made for the Gentile people. So they were, yes, they were allowed to sacrifice, but it had to be done in a specific order. It had to be done according to the law of Moses still at this time, because Christ had not yet been crucified.
Questions? Okay. Question number four. What was the first main problem with what Christ... We pretty much answered this. What was the first main problem? Judy?
They were making a profit.
They were making a profit. On God.
Yeah.
On God. Making a profit on God.
So then when you consider that the Sadducees took care of the running of the temple.
Everybody got a cut except for the poor people. Yep. All right. What was the second main problem with this in the temple?
They were sealed in the outer.
Preventing.
You just said through they were sealed.
Exactly.
So apparently, if they wanted to, they could have went outside of the outer temple.
And sold.
Mm-hmm. According to.
Out on the road. Yep. Yep. Okay. What Old Testament passage did Jesus quote in the parallel passage of Mark? What Old Testament? I looked this up. Anybody look it up? But Darlene did because she was studying.
Yeah. Isaiah 56:7, and where it said that God's house was to be a house of prayer.
A den of thieves. Can you think of situations today where God's house is maybe being used for something profitable on His name?
The thing that came to my mind when I was studying.
Yep, I did. But go ahead.
Okay, because, or even have a dinner over here where you charge a fee.
Right.
Is this where that came from?
It very well came
to my mind. Even though it's in the outer temple, you know, the fellowship hall is the outer part of the church.
But remember what the intent was of the sellers and the changers, and what the intent you have to know of what you're doing. It, with God and with Jesus, it all comes down to intent. It all comes down to what's going on in your heart.
Well, after the cross, the hearts of the believer, because the church is the temple.
Who else was the temple? I'm sorry, Judy. Jesus. Because this all was going on when? When was this all taking place? Right before he was arrested, convicted, sentenced, and crucified. And he said, you can destroy this temple, and what?
I'll rebuild it in 3 days.
I will rebuild it in 3 days.
Well, he'll demonstrate this. So okay. All this is foreshadowing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's see here. Oh yes.
Why did they need to change?
Why?
Because, I can look this up.
I did too.
It's in Mark 12:17. It says, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's, and unto God. The coin had the picture of Caesar on the denarius. So people were asking Jesus about paying tax. Coin. Picture of Caesar's picture was on the coin. Okay. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar's. Also, when they came to Jerusalem for this Passover, there's a temple tax. Everybody had paid just a little bit of money here. Courthouse twice a year and pay our taxes, I guess, more or less.
Poor people.
Yeah.
But that's, and also, they were coming from many different areas. Mm-hmm. So there was different types of money that was used, and they had to use all the same money in the temple. So that's, and guess what? That changers were making money off of that. They just didn't switch it.
They probably couldn't bring their sacrifices that far either. They'd have spoiled.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, exactly. So this was a very profitable time. It was like being a florist on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Okay. How did Jesus fulfill Zechariah 14? Anybody? Don't just rely on Darlene.
Uh-huh.
How did
remember the verse beginning?
Well, it says Zechariah prophesied that one day there would no longer be merchants in the house of the Lord of hosts.
Anger. He didn't have a hatred anger. And outcome is always restoration. Jesus always outcome. He's not gonna
so it's not a
say,
get back at you
no,
anger.
No.
It's a restore you
right.
anger.
And the whip wasn't necessary that he made out of the cords.
So why do you think he did it?
He used the whip to get people's attention.
Yeah, and it symbolized divine judgment too, showing that these actions needed corrected, and this was...
You've got to remember, when Christ cleansed the temple, Christ did not have worldly emotions.
Uh-uh.
So he didn't have worldly emotion of anger, of being impassive. He didn't have none of that. So it was a spiritual emotion. Now, if you read... a lot of commentary and different things, a lot of people will say the whip was more to move the animals, to get them going. He because Christ had compassion, he's not going to use this on people because he didn't have worldly emotion. So it's not like
he didn't
like
have worldly emotion, but he had compassion.
He had spiritual compassion. Christ had no worldly trait. So when you think about anger, when you think about getting mad, when we get angry with somebody, it's a worldly emotion. It's the old nature. It's that emotion coming forth. Because when you get anger and you got a whip in your hand, you what?
Use it.
You're going to use it. See, but he didn't have... He did... Christ, when he was born upon this earth, he did not inherit Adam's old nature. So everything that he had came from God. So that means when it talks about anger, as Diane said, his anger was a righteous anger. There was no, it's not like we think of as anger. So his righteous anger was more of compassion on the people, not to be mean like we think of anger.
And think about his state of mind. At this point, he was coming to Jerusalem and he knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
God had showed him what was
sure, he knew this.
Now, don't you think that would have some kind of an effect on his personality a little bit?
Well,
you know, we're facing what
it couldn't.
Facing?
No, because when he went to the cross, he didn't. He said, I considered that a joy, going to the cross. Christ didn't inherit anything from Adam. So it's hard for us to understand this, but he can't have anger. He couldn't have anger like we do.
But he had sorrow.
Huh?
He had sorrow.
But again, it's a spiritual sorrow. It's not sorrow like
I'm having trouble with this myself.
I know.
Because I'm thinking Christ had joy. And if Christ knows what it's like to be me, he had to have experienced emotions, because I'm a very emotional person.
Yeah,
I'm having a hard time with
no
this.
No worldly emotion. There was nothing worldly about him. He, and see, it's hard for us to understand this because almost every emotion we have is a worldly emotion that we inherited from Adam. Christ did not have that because he inherited nothing from Adam. Everything that he had come from God.
If he would have had any of that worldly emotion, he wouldn't have.
Right. So when you're thinking about these things, you got to think about it more in a righteous spiritual manner, not in a worldly manner. And this is a good lesson to bring this out, because most people say, oh, Christ came to the temple, he saw everything that was going on, he made a whip, he beat people, he run them out.
That's how the lesson has been taught through the years.
But there's no truth to that. Because only somebody with an inherited worldly emotion would do that. And Christ did not have that.
So he wasn't really
So you
mad.
Have to think more on, not mad like we think of being mad. If you and Christ were standing here together and somebody come up and kicked both of you in the shin really hard, your expression of anger and his expression of anger would be two different things, because yours would be from your inherited worldly emotion and his would be from the Father. And you would see a big difference in the outcome.
Maybe if the Lord wasn't standing right by me, but if he was standing by me, I
could have
done
it. Yeah. You'd suck it up? No. But you understand what I'm trying to say.
I do.
We have to think more on a righteous level when we're looking at these things.
I think I've spent so much time in my life humanizing Christ.
We all do.
And now... He's not like I am.
No, Christ went through everything that we will ever go through upon this earth, and every outcome, and this is why Christ came and lived upon this earth to be our example, because every outcome of everything that he went through was a righteous outcome. Everything that we go through, everything that we experience, our first instinct is to what? Is whatever we inherited from Adam. That was never Christ's first instinct, because he did not have that. So when you're thinking about this, that you gotta, it's hard to put this stuff aside.
Yeah.
And think about that. The little saying that came out years ago, what would Jesus do?
Yeah, exactly.
Do?
That's exactly that what I was sitting here thinking.
Is because
what would Jesus do?
We never do what Jesus would have done, because we don't follow after our... And we have the righteousness. As believers, we have it. Because Christ, when he hung upon the cross and paid our sin debt, he said, here's what I'll do. If you accept this, he said, I'll trade you. I'll pay your sin debt. I'll take that. I'll give you my righteousness so that you can live as I live.
And he also gave us a helper to do it.
Yes. So it indwells within us. But our first instinct still goes back to what?
Adam.
What we inherited from Adam. So when I get mad through my worldly emotion that I inherited from Adam, and the outcome is never good.
What are you laughing about?
So what was Christ's emotion when he was in the garden and he said, Father, if it be thy will, take this cup from me? What was that emotion?
Okay, that would have been the emotion of a righteous love and a righteous compassion. Because when he prayed that prayer, he knew he had to bear that cup. He already knew that. So he wasn't. A lot of people thinks that he would. If you remember, you read in the Bible, and I'd have to look the scripture up. It said he could have called legions of angels,
right,
and never went through it to begin with. But he didn't, because he knew that was for him to do. So here's what happens in a lot of churches today, and I could name a bunch of them, but I wouldn't do that. But here's what happens in churches today. People play upon worldly emotions. So when you walk into a church and you see these thousands of people and the whatever's going on up front, and the tears are streaming and people are all emotional, more likely it's worldly emotion. More than likely. Very few, I would bet, to understand is a righteous emotion. Because man knows how to play upon our worldly emotions. Look at the movies you watch. Look at the songs that you listen to. Look at, and it gives, and what? You become emotional. But it's a worldly emotion that you inherited from Adam.
Get thee behind me, Satan.
I tell people all the time, because they say, when we get this, we rebuke the devil. And I can tell you one thing, you cannot rebuke what you have already invited into your heart. That's why he says resist. Not rebuke, resist. Okay, I confused you enough.
Somebody bring the Rand McNally out. We'll get back here. I'm just, you know what? It wasn't confusing. It's just
confusing.
I have a lot to think about.
It is.
I have a lot to think about, huh?
You know what I'm grinning about? You standing beside Jesus and getting kicked.
That's enough.
Dad has a record. He used to play for us when we was little, and this man, he got his finger slammed in the door.
Okay. Can we just real quick whip down through these practical points, because I thought they were so good this week. Number one, somebody want to read that for us?
Jesus consistently prioritized.
Consistently prioritize the worship of God. Do we do that every day? Every day.
We should.
Wouldn't it be a great thing if when we, and Tim, I know you do, but when we first wake up in the morning, if our first thoughts were worshiping God, thanking Him and worshiping Him for this day. That, it really sets your day off good. It really puts you in the right frame of mind. Okay, number two.
We will sometimes encounter people who hinder the worship of God and extort others.
That's true, right? But you know what? We have no excuse. We have no excuse because Christ gave us the example. Right? Come on in. Come on in. Come on in. Welcome, welcome. You may sit anywhere you like. I promise we will not pick on you.
They're from out there.
Okay. Tim. Sit wherever you want. We will not pick on you. Thank you for coming. Thank you. Thank you. Welcome. We're just finishing this up. I've got about two more minutes. Okay. Practical point number three. Somebody?
We must oppose those who make it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, we got people calling in too.
No kidding. Okay. Number four.
I'm good.
Hold on, we'll get started here and there. Or not look the other way.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. Stand up against people who take advantage of the poor. For some reason, that's something that really, that plays big in my heart. Number five.
We must pay and make money.
Now, I'm just going to real quickly say this before Tim does. It made me think of the mega preachers. Okay. That's what that made me feel of. And I don't want to be judgmental, right? But flying around in jets and stuff like that, I'm not so sure that was the best use of the money. Right? Okay. Last one, number six. I'll read it. Strong emotions and actions are sometimes the most appropriate response to a situation. Kenny Davis.
And that really should say strong spiritual.
Oh, no.
Emotions and
no.
Actions.
That means I can't be standing there and get kicked beside Jesus.
You learn that. Study verse 17, the last part of that. We don't have time now. The zeal of thine house hath eaten me up. Go home and study that, and you'll learn
yes.
about your spiritual yes. emotions versus your worldly emotion.
And how that played into Christ's crucifixion.
Yes.
His zeal. Anybody else have anything they want to say?
Well, it'll continue through all eternity.
Yep.
Anybody else? Thank you. I know that, I'm telling you, this
good job.
No, this is a tough crowd. You all know more than I do. All right, take it away, Tim.
I think we need to. Okay, we usually do the pledge. This is this time.